This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast. Glad you could join me. And we are recording this week from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, the site of Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua, the rematch, the biggest fight in boxing in 2019, and one of the biggest heavyweight rematches that we've seen in a long time. Andy Ruiz, of course, knocked off Anthony Joshua back in June, knocked him out, took his pieces of the heavyweight title. Joshua gets his chance at redemption on Saturday, and Ruiz gets his opportunity to really cement himself as a top-tier heavyweight in this division. Got a great show lined up for you. Sergio Mora, the former junior middleweight champion, DAZN boxing analyst, he joins me, and we talk all things Joshua and Ruiz, from the adjustments that Joshua needs to make to how Ruiz wins a rematch, what both these fighters look like out here in Saudi Arabia. We got you covered top to bottom on this fight. We also get a little bit into the Boxing Hall of Fame voting, specifically when it comes to fighters that test positive for banned substances. That came up in this past week with Shane Mosley being elected into the Boxing Hall of Fame. Sergio's got a strong opinion on that. We dive into that and a little bit more. Also, Eddie Hearn, the promoter from Matchroom Boxing, the promoter of Ruiz Joshua. He has been Joshua's promoter from day one, and he is, to say the least, anxious about this moment. Big opportunity, big, huge moment for Matchroom and for Anthony Joshua. We talk about everything that Eddie has seen from AJ during this camp, his expectation for the fight, what happens if AJ loses, and a little bit more about the future of Matchroom USA and DAZN in 2020. So stick around for that. A lot of good stuff in this podcast. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, joining me now on the podcast from Saudi Arabia, friend of the podcast, former junior middleweight champion, DAZN broadcaster, Invisalign wearer, Sergio Mora. What's up, Sergio?
Good morning. It's 2:30 p.m. I got 3 hours sleep. Oh. I am exhausted, but the Invisalign is off.
I would like to fact check you and say you didn't get 3 hours sleep. You may have slept in like 3 hour bursts, but you probably slept like 11 hours.
Well, if you didn't go from beginning to end, it just doesn't count. You're waking up. So I had 3 hours sleep.
No, that's not how it works.
It's how it works for me.
It's not ideal to get, you know, 3 hours, then 3 hours, and 3 hours, but you probably slept at least nine going to bed. We left the restaurant last night at what, like 11?
The point is, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted, but I respect you, Chris, because I've seen what you've been going through. And to all the listeners, we didn't sleep for about 20 hours straight. And I have a high respect for him and his drinking abilities as well. Not here, but in New York.
Not here, for sure.
But in New York. And yeah, I got to say, you're a hard worker. You play hard, you work hard.
Yes, we try to. And here, we're going to be working hard for the next couple of days as we get ready for Ruiz Joshua 2, the biggest fight of 2019. One of the biggest rematches in at least recent heavyweight boxing history. Back in June, Andy Ruiz knocked out Anthony Joshua in a stunning upset. Ruiz at one point was a 25-1 underdog. I think he closed at around 15-1, but he got the win. And 6 months have passed, and AJ in Saudi Arabia is going to try to get his belts back and get back on track in the same way Lennox Lewis did and the same way Vladimir Klitschko did after he beat Lehman Brewster in the upset. Let's start with Joshua. And we got to see him yesterday. I spent a couple of days with him in Sheffield, but you got to see him yesterday at the press conference, at the fighter meetings with him yesterday. What were your takeaways from that? What did you see in Anthony Joshua this week?
He was your typical politician, your typical... he still carries himself like a champion, but he's a former champion. But he still understands the business. He still does the wink and the smile. He still parades around shaking hands, and he's still that promoter's dream. You know, there's nothing taken away from that. But once we got him in the fighter meeting, the fighter came out of him. You know, you're still articulate. You're still likable, saying all the right things. But as a fighter, I'm watching him. I'm watching the look in his eye. I'm watching his body language, and you could tell he is eager to get back in there. Whether he has the right strategy and game plan, and whether he'll execute it, that's another thing. But the body language, the facial expressions, everything he said, he's eager to get his respect back.
You know, one of the things he was criticized for after the first fight was that he was a little bit too kind of aloof or indifferent maybe to losing his titles, that he was taking pictures with Andy Ruiz, he hugged him. He didn't seem like he was devastated by the loss, and I've seen a lot of fighters come out and criticize him for that. You're a fighter. What was your reaction to the way he kind of responded to losing the titles?
I don't really take too much into the character of a fighter, because everyone's different personality-wise, and that's just the way he is. Some people get devastated, and some people know how to deal with it and just pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and keep moving, and I think he's the latter. You know, Joshua at first was becoming very bitter after that loss. He was saying some stuff. He was going to a dark side, and I've been there, man. I think every fighter that lost the world title, and it's not even the world title, actually. Let me tell you what it is. It's the criticism, man. It's the fact that you were liked so well by the majority of people and fans and promoters and everyone that's trying to market your brand, and then they leave you in the dust when you lose, man. They just shut the doors on you, and fans turn on you. That's what gets you into the dark side. That's what turns you into a bitter boxer. And then you just say, you know what? Fuck everybody. And then you start becoming more selfish. And then fans see that. Fans see the fact that you're turning into this heel. You're not doing it purposely. You're transforming me into this. And I saw that in the beginning stages of it. I don't see that anymore. I think he caught himself. I think that Klitschko conversation that he was talking about made a big difference, because Klitschko, he had some dark moments, but he never went to the dark side. He was a classy guy, a classy champion, a Hall of Famer all throughout his career. And it's rare for a fighter not to have a hiccup in not only your career with a loss, but with your personality and your image. It's so rare. And that's why Klitschko is a prime example of just a good guy and as someone that you want him to be your mentor. Joshua, he cleaned himself up nicely, though, personality-wise and career-wise. And now all he has to do is take care of business in there. And the fact that he took this fight on short notice. I mean, 4 or 5 weeks isn't short notice, but when you're not motivated for a fighter, that's short notice. When you're training for another fighter and your anger and resentment and you want to shut up a big mouth, especially in New York against a New Yorker, that's motivation. And then they throw a quiet, nice guy smiling at you, very humble. And then, you know, there's no motivation there.
Yeah, that's something that Rob McCracken and Anthony Joshua talked about this week, how, you know, it was a factor that, you know, they're preparing for Jarrell Miller, a bigger guy, a volume punching type of guy without any discernible power there. Then less than two months to go, you have to switch to Andy Ruiz, a very different fighter, and I'm not going to talk any trash whatsoever. I mean, Jarrell Miller was shoving Anthony Joshua at the opening press conference. Andy Ruiz is like shaking his hand and holding his belts like at the press conferences. So I get that. I think that's a factor too. And for people that criticize Joshua and his demeanor and how he acted after the Ruiz fight, it's kind of who he is. Like, he acted that way after the Klitschko win. He acted that way after beating Joseph Parker. He has never been a Mike Tyson type of champion. He has never been even a Deontay Wilder type of champion. It's kind of, he just is this personable, easygoing guy, wants to shake everybody's hand in the room. It's just, I don't think it sort of fit his personality to have him act the way he did after that Ruiz loss.
The Greeks have a saying, and I put it in the back of my trunks when I fought Vernon Forrest: character is fate, and no matter how much you try to change, you know, you are who you are, man. You're put into this world with a temperament, and even though you can't say, you know what, fuck you, fuck off, in the end you feel bad about that, and you're like, no, you know what, I'm sorry, man, I shouldn't have said that, because the real you comes out of you, and that's what we saw with Anthony Joshua. And there's a lot of parallels with me and Andy Ruiz as far as you know, 0-60 in success and everything that came with it, and then losing it really quick in the immediate rematch. My rematch was immediate. I was in the ring within 2 months. He had 3 months to prepare, so that's a lot different. But still, his was a lot bigger as well. I'm really impressed where both are. But Anthony Joshua, I got to say, he went through a lot more. You know, he went through a lot more, not only physically with that beating and how he got embarrassed and his reputation got tarnished. And but the money was still there. See, usually fighters, when they lose, they have to take a couple steps back, not only in reputation and in their career, but in purses, you know, in money. And he went the opposite direction. He got more money. He has to come to Saudi Arabia, but he's getting a boatload of money. And that's rare in boxing. So, I mean, things are still there for him, but he needs this win. It's so crucial for him to get this win because, it, you know, if he doesn't, then he's going to go back to the bitter side, the going back to the maybe the $1 million mark, which is still a lot of money, but for him, that's taking a huge step back. But the money gets going to get cut, popularity, and then he will go back to the dark side.
All right, let's drill down on a couple of things here. We look at Joshua, and it's clear he's lost a little bit of weight. He might be down as low as 238, 235 pounds for this fight. That will be lower than when he came in for the last one. He told me that the weight loss, you mentioned Klitschko, had a lot to do with some advice that Vladimir Klitschko gave him. Vladimir told him, look, you're a CrossFit champion. You're a weightlifter. Get away from all that. Vladimir told him, look at Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps doesn't box during the day and then go swimming at night. He swims all the time. So Joshua's added even more boxing to his training for this fight. What did you make of a slimmer down version of Joshua? Was that the right decision coming into this fight?
He looks a lot leaner, and his face looks drawn. And usually you see the face that drawn for a fighter that needs to make weight. He's a heavyweight. He doesn't have to make weight. So his face concerned me, but his body didn't. His body looked good. It looked muscular. It looked tall and lean. It's statuesque. He still looks strong. He still has that, like I said, that fire in his belly as far as, you know, physically how he looks. But his eyes look a little bit fatigued. He looked a little bit drawn. And that, you know, a lot of us look like that before a fight, but he's not making weight. So I want to see how he looks after the weigh-in. I always say this to people and in reporters, and I even tweet about it when they ask me my opinion to give a prediction for a fight. I said, I'm not going to give a prediction until after the weigh-in. After the weigh-in, I'm going to see exactly how he made the weight, how his body looked, how his juices are flowing, what kind of energy does he have, the eye of the tiger there, the stare-off. A fighter gets a lot out of that. So at the weigh-in, I'll be able to see if that was just him that tired that one night of doing the press and the media and just, you know, the traveling and all of the above, or something's missing. So it's at the weigh-in that I'm going to get a better look at that.
Yeah, a heavyweight shouldn't have any issues with, you know, weight drain or anything like that.
But he looked drained.
I get it. I take your word for it. Like, I get it that he looked drained. That's strange that a guy would look that way.
Maybe he's emotionally drained and he's doing a lot.
There's a lot of pressure.
He's doing a lot, absolutely, and there's a lot of pressure. So maybe he's just spiritually drained. But physically, he looks very good.
All right, let's talk about Ruiz, who told us he's going to come in probably a little bit heavier than the last time. They were right around the same weight or a little heavier. I thought, you know, a few weeks back, Sergio, I thought he might have lost some weight. There were some pictures out there of him on the internet, shirtless, sparring with Michael Hunter. But he said he's going to come in a little heavier. He kind of looked, I mean, he kind of always looks the same. He looks like Andy Ruiz, which is sort of it sort of should be a definition, kind of looks like Andy Ruiz. What did you make of what you saw from him, what you heard from him at the press conference and the fighter meetings?
I got to say, it's similar. It's very similar, only the body transition is the opposite. They're saying all the right things. As a fighter, I'm looking at them, and they still have that confident look in their face, that confident look in their eye. But as a fighter, we got to judge you as what you're saying, how you're saying it, your body language, and then, of course, how you look physically. Andy Ruiz looks the same. He still looks soft. He looks chubby, if not chubbier. And there's been rumors by sources in the know and people that have been here for...
Oh, you're dropping sources stuff now on the podcast?
I'm like you, buddy. I'm learning off of you. Okay. There's sources. You know, I got my spies out there. So there's sources that have been here a lot longer than I have that say he hasn't been training as intense. He goes to the fighter meetings and he just does the bare minimum. He's been eating a lot while here. He did that promotion for a marijuana company that he's getting a lot of criticism for. I mean, for a heavyweight champion, you should stay away from that, but it's his decision. So I don't really know how much really stock to put into that, but he does look a little softer and heavier, but he's sane and he looks all the right things. And again, I won't be able to tell until they get on the scale. And with Andy Ruiz, you won't see it in his body. You'll see it in his energy. And I've definitely been seeing energy out of him, but that can be just, you know, bravado. That could be that championship bravado. I had that in the rematch with Vernon Forrest. I knew I was a shell of myself at the weigh-in. I was spent. I was everything. But at the press conference, I was King Kong. I was telling him I was going to do this. I was going to do that. And then after I lost all that weight and I became a shell of myself, I tucked my tail between my leg and realized I'm in trouble tomorrow night.
So let me talk a little bit more about that, because you as you mentioned, you have been in almost the exact same situation as Andy Ruiz. You won. You were a champion. You upset Vernon Forrest. You fought him in the rematch immediately in that very next fight. What was different for you about being a champion? Was there something with the training? Was there something with the mindset coming in? Were you as hungry in that rematch as you were in the first one? What was different?
For me, it was time. I was the world champion, and when you're a world champion, and it's not really the belt, it's the tension you get with it, especially if it was the bigger the fight, the more attention. And you know, I kind of parlayed my contender celebrity with the championship as well. So that's why I can kind of I can see that overnight success that Andy Ruiz had. But Andy Ruiz did it, you know, times a thousand. It really changes you, and not only changes you as a fighter, but it changes you as a person. You don't see yourself the same anymore. You go everywhere and people are calling you champ. Everything's for free. You're mingling with celebrities. You know, a kid from East LA shouldn't be mingling with A-listers and red carpets and stuff like that. So,
hey, Andy Ruiz rocking some serious bling this week. I mean, he had the gold chain around his neck, the ring on his finger. I mean, he must have been wearing, and I have no context for how much stuff costs, but I guess that's like six figures on his body.
Yeah, that's foolish. He'll realize that later. I mean, that's like the worst investment. You know, I mean, I bought myself a new car. I traveled a lot. I wasted my money on fine meals, though. That's what I like. I like nice shoes and fine meals.
Yes, you do.
So, you know, that was a better investment for me. But look, when you grow up poor and when you make that kind of life-changing money, let him indulge. It was a lot of money that he won, and he's going to win even more in this rematch, and even more if he wins. So that monetary motivation, it burns for a fighter who grew up poor, and all he had was his fist and dreams.
Yeah, I mean, I think the hunger is the difference. If you remember back leading into the last fight, Andy Ruiz beat Dimitrenko and then immediately started calling out Anthony Joshua. As soon as he knew that the Jarrell Miller fight had fallen through, he started Instagram DMing Eddie Hearn, trying to get that fight. Does he have the same hunger?
No.
And I said this to Andy Ruiz's face, like the people that, you know, people he work with, you know, at Top Rank and other places, they have told me that the enemy of Andy Ruiz has been time. If you give Andy Ruiz too much time in between fights, it's not good for him. So he's got 6 months now between the first fight and the rematch. Has he been training at the same level? Is he as prepared as well? You're certain he's not. You don't think he's going to be as sharp in this one as he was in the last one?
No, I think he'll be sharp because he had time to train. I keep emphasizing on the time to train, and he has a great trainer in Manny Robles in his corner that's just as motivated. Manny Robles lost his entire stable, you know, to other promoters and other trainers, and they left him because they didn't believe in him, you know. And then all of a sudden, you get this chubby kid, you know, that gives you an opportunity, and both of you change your lives for the better. Now Manny Robles is red hot as a trainer, and we got the heavyweight champion of the world that in your stable. So it's a great Cinderella story for both of them, but he had enough time to train. So let me just keep telling you that. So if you have 2 months to train, there's no way you're not going to be hungry and in great shape and motivated. It's mentally what changes you as a fighter and as a person. That, and you can call it hunger, whatever you want to call it. I just call it or a lack of focus. It's something that's not there anymore. You know, it's something that you lost with the fame, with the money, with the traveling, with I've already made it. You know, I don't need to get it. I know that if I lose this fight, I'm still going to be fine. Actually, I'm going to be better. You know, so it's that loss, that need that's not there anymore. And if that's what you want to call hunger, that's what it is. But yeah, we lose that edge once we start having success.
All right, you mentioned Manny Robles, who has done an excellent job with Andy Ruiz. Anthony Joshua, as you and I have talked about repeatedly, we have difference of opinion on this, stuck with Rob McCracken, said, you know, Rob's still my guy. Now, he did go out there and add some people to his training team, some new voices, took the pad work away from McCracken so McCracken can be more visual with all this, watch him work the pads, try to come up with maybe a different...
That was the interesting part. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the fact that he said, okay, I'm going to keep my trainer, but I'm going to bring in two trainers, a pad guy and a technique guy or a style guy or someone just...
Brought in a guy from that came out of the Kronk gym.
Yeah, so. Out of the Kronk gym. Or maybe that's just a person that has that Klitschko philosophy and main mind frame. But he brought two trainers, but he still kept McCracken. Okay, so then this is how I kind of saw that. He didn't want to leave his day one trainer, but he knew he had to. But he just gave him a kind of a smaller role, and he's still going to be the face of the trainer. Like, you're still going to see his name at the top of the list, head trainer, you know, Robert McCracken. But I think the ones doing all the hard lifting are these two trainers coming in. And here's another thing, whenever you have a new trainer, you want to impress him. You're not only motivated by the new things you're learning, but you want to impress him by, look at how fast I am, how hard I hit, how quick I can adapt, how fast I can learn. So that's the motivation he's going to get from the two new guys, having impressed them and putting and utilizing what they're teaching you and doing that into the ring. And then you have Robert McCracken, who may not agree with these trainers 100%, but he has to respect Anthony Joshua's decision.
Yeah, the two new trainers, Joby Clayton and Angel Fernandez, two people I'm not really familiar with.
No, me neither. That's the reason I couldn't remember their name. But yeah. Fernandez, I've heard of, but the other gentleman, I haven't.
I mean, look, I talked to Freddie Roach about this a couple of weeks back, and Anthony Joshua reached out to Freddie Roach. He didn't want, and a guy like Freddie Roach and other top trainers are not going to take on a supporting role. Like, if you want them to train you, you got to train with them.
And they're not going to take, Freddie Roach especially, is not going to take a lazy fighter.
No. And he's going to say,
a fighter that you can't rely on. If you're going to have commitments and appearances, and you're going to go do the Jimmy Kimmel show and red carpets and do all this other stuff, and you're not going to give me 100%, you know what? I respect the money you're offering. I respect the huge opportunity, but no thank you. And he's done it before with Chavez and numerous others.
Took Chavez back, though. So Chavez Jr. is back in the fold as well. So he's willing to go either way. But he tried to find other voices. He found two other voices. We'll see if it turns out to be the right call with those guys. The stakes for this fight for both are pretty high. Anthony Joshua, I don't think his career would be over if he lost, but man, he'd have to start to really rebuild that whole thing. And Andy Ruiz, you know, on the table is most likely a major pay-per-view showdown with Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury at some point next year. But if you look at this fight, I mean, who are the stakes higher for? Who has more on the line in this fight?
I know there's a joke in there with steak and Andy Ruiz, but I'm too tired.
I didn't even think about that. I'm too tired
and I don't have my wit with me right now.
Got another 11 hours, all right?
You keep saying that it's do or die for Joshua. I, of course, disagree with you as always because every fighter has that stumble, and he's already had it at Madison Square Garden June 1st, Anthony Joshua, and now if he has another one, it's a stumble to the same fighter, and maybe he just has your number, and he said that. Joshua keeps insisting, maybe this guy just has my number, and if that's the case, that's boxing. You know, I gotta pick up and move on, and I like that attitude, man. Maybe I don't like it as a fan because I said, well, he's really not taking this fight serious. If he loses, he's going to treat it like another loss. That's the way you have to think about as a fighter, man. As a growing up poor, you're going to get beat down a lot, right? And every time you get beat down, you'll be like, oh, I'm used to that. Get up, do it again. And then you get beat down somewhere else. Oh, okay, I took a beating there. And then when you get beaten up so much, you become tough. And then all of a sudden people want to learn. How did you get so tough? Well, I got the shit kicked out of me for the last 20 years. That's Joshua, man. So if he loses this fight, of course, he's going to take a huge step back. Not only that, we're going to take a step back with the zone and everything that comes with the gravy train. There's another joke there with Anthony Ruiz and the gravy train.
You crack yourself up, don't you?
I do, man. I love wit. You have none of it. But Yeah, you know, you know how to pick yourself up and dust yourself up when you grow up from when you come from that and make something out of nothing. You're like your own alchemist, man. You're like, I can turn shit into gold and I can do it all over again.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that I don't think Anthony Joshua's career is over. I do think that even though it is just one guy that beat him, his time as an elite fighter might be over. Now, if you come back in 2020,
you know what?
You win like three low-level fights. So you can put yourself back into the mix. But I don't know how he mentally. I guess it's how he loses, right? Like if he gets knocked out in the same way again, I don't know how you recover from that.
You recover by taking smaller opponents. We've seen it in history in boxing. Anytime you get knocked out by a fighter that just had your number or you had one bad night, you go back to the drawing board. You get a couple of soft touches. You rebuild. I mean, we've seen every type of a loss you can possibly imagine. We've seen fighters rebuild. It's whether you want to put all your marbles back in the bag and say, okay, let's give it one more try. That's why fighters retire. That's why fighters just slowly disappear, because they don't want to go back to square one because it's too fucking hard.
No, I don't think he can't rebuild, because when you're a star the level of Joshua, you can still fight a low-level opponent and put 20,000 people in seats over in the UK. I just think if he gets beat this way, mentally, I'm not sure how he recovers from it, because if he all of a sudden becomes a chinny guy, where you start talking about, can he stand the punches?
You recover because you're at the elite level, and then you go.
But he's not at the elite level.
No, if you lose at the elite level, you recover by kicking the shit out of some Joe Schmo, like, you know, someone like, you know, just
okay, but
somebody, somebody that you know you're gonna feel good beating him, and you're gonna get the knockout, then you get another one, then you slowly throwing a name in there, and then it's like, okay, I still got it. Then you give him a contender, and then we'll see where he's at again. Rebuilding is just it's a matchmaker's job. It's not really the fighter's job. It's a matchmaker's job, bringing him back to life, giving him the confidence, giving him that okay, I still got it. All right, then you give yourself that I'm still a champion, and then once you get to that semi-final level of okay, this is one more fight, and then I'm back. Then you motivated yourself. I got here again. I still got it. I'm going to shut everybody up. And then the matchmaker's in the back saying, well, I've done this a dozen times. Let's see what this kid does with it this time. But the fighter's always going to be his worst enemy, but he's going to also be the best thing, because he's the fighter. He's going to know how to turn nothing into something. And it takes champions to do that.
Look, I've seen fighters rebuild. In the UK, we saw David Price rebuild after knockout loss after knockout loss. But every time he got back to that high level.
Not on a championship level.
No, he didn't lose necessarily on the championship level. But, you know, when you're exposed and a little bit chinny, again, this comes down to how he loses. If he gets knocked out again, then I'm just wondering, like, does he ever get that ability to win fights against big punchers back? That's money, that to me is. And he's, look, he's beaten some big punchers. Dillian White was a big puncher, is a big puncher, and he beat him. And I don't
real,
know.
Real quick, yeah. Chris, because it just totally parallels to what we're talking about here. I almost retired in 2012. I know that sounds like music to your ears.
No, since you're not retired now, Peter Manfredo.
I'm retired. Well,
you are not retired.
I am not retired.
Peter Manfredo.
Okay, but look, let me just get this out of the way. Okay. In 2010, I fought Shane Mosley, who's going to the Hall of Fame, by the way. Whether you like it or not, Chris Mannix. Chris,
that's separate
Shane
discussion.
Mosley is going to the Hall of Fame. All right, so I fought him. And it was a draw versus a legend, a great fighter. But I took so much heavy criticism that I wanted to quit, man. And then after that, they threw Brian Vera at me, a Texan in Texas. I lost a majority decision rematch. I lost a split decision. I hated the world. I wanted to stop. I went from making, I won't tell you how much, but mid to high six figures to fighting Brian Vera for $10,000. Okay, that's the difference of why champions don't want to start back to normal, because they give you tough matchmakers and promoters. Okay, you want that championship fight again? You want that championship money? You're going to have to fight a Texan in Texas for this kind of money. And if you're a champion and you're like, nah, I'm better than that, that's why you disappear. But if you still have that fire in you and you want to shut a lot of people up, from promoters to fans to the matchmaker that got you beat, to writers like yourself, then you want to slowly do it, because that's what got you, because you have it in you. And I have five fights, and then finally I got back to Daniel Jacobs, made some championship money, almost beat him that first time. Second time, different story. And then I got back to the championship level. Didn't win a championship, but I got back to championship money. But it took a lot of work work. It took 3 years of rebuilding, and it took a lot of swallowing my pride. But you know what, man? Like they say, swallowing your pride never gives you indigestion.
Thanks, Al Haymon, for that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And guess who's with Al Haymon? Andy Ruiz.
Yes, so. He is. Yes, he is. There you go. Let me ask you this about, we know how Ruiz is going to fight. He kind of is what he is as a fighter. He's going to be aggressive. I think he's going to try to throw a lot of punches, go to the body. Does Anthony Joshua have to fight completely differently to win this fight?
Well, this is something we're going to touch on the telecast, so I'm not going to shoot all my bullets here. No, he doesn't have to fight completely different because he can't. You know, he can change his game plan, but whether he can do it for 12 rounds, no, not whether. He can't do it for 12 rounds. It's damn near impossible to do something new for that amount of time. Can you practice in the gym and have success with it for a couple of rounds or against lesser, you know, against sparring partners? Yeah. But then once you get into with the guy that knocked you out, doing it for 36 minutes is damn near impossible, if not impossible or improbable, whatever you want to use. I don't think he could change as a fighter. Change with the strategy, yes. How long he can maintain that strategy is the question.
Yeah, it's a big question out there. All right, before we go, you dropped the Shane Mosley line in there, so I just want to clarify what you were talking about. My issue with the Boxing Hall of Fame is I think there should be a discussion about fighters that have either tested positive for PEDs or admit to taking PEDs. Should they be in the Hall of Fame? Baseball has decided, most of its voters have decided, that the players during the steroid era are not going to get in. We're talking about Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Roger Clemens and the athletes that did or admitted to doing, or at least there was an incredible amount of evidence that they did those things. My issue with Mosley, as we know, he admitted in grand jury testimony that he took something. He took the...
Without knowing,
but took something. I don't know if I believe the without knowing stuff, but that is a different story. You're a fighter. Should fighters that have tested positive or admit taking stuff be allowed in the Hall of Fame?
It's a great question. It's a slippery slope.
Listen,
for a fighter it is. You're asking me to judge a man that I've known a long time. I've been in the ring with him for 12 rounds, and I'm still friends with now. I know how he is inside and outside the ring. I know how he thinks. I know his character. I mean, I'm not saying I know him in and out, but he's always been a hard worker. I've seen him in the gym. I've seen him back when he had nothing, how hard he worked. I've seen how hard he works when he had everything.
I'll let you finish. Hard work and taking something illegal, they're not mutually exclusive. Like I think Barry Bonds worked hard. I think Roger Clemens worked hard.
Okay, but I was going to finish it with this. Okay, how were they performing when they didn't have it all? So as a lightweight, when he wasn't making the huge amounts of money and the big fights on HBO, when he was on the come up, you're telling me he was also taking steroids there?
I have no idea.
Exactly. So then that's my point, Chris. You have to really understand that, okay, how were they performing before? Barry Bonds was awesome. I mean, I'm not a baseball fan, so maybe I shouldn't say this.
No, but he was awesome.
But he was an awesome baseball player when he was leaner and thinner.
He was probably a Hall of Famer before he became Barry Bonds with the melon.
There you go. So I think that's what you got to take in consideration. The eyes that know, leave it to the professionals. Leave it to the professional critics. Like, you're a professional a-hole critic, whatever you want to call yourself, but you know your stuff. So maybe you can just like you judge people in the Hall of Fame. Judge people in the PED scandals. Okay, look, let's judge his career in a 20-year whatever it is. All right, so when did he start changing? What fighters did we see it with? His body looked different, whatever it is. And then that's when you start gauging exactly when he started taking it. It's scientific. It takes a lot of work, and it's probably a lot of speculation. But as a fighter, you don't throw away a Hall of Fame career because on an accident. Give him the benefit of the doubt. This guy was a beast before, during, after, and guess what, man? He's always been a class act. Isn't steroids supposed to turn you into a fucking raging asshole? You know, if that's the case, I would think you're like, I'll steroid up.
Okay.
He's always been a great guy. He's always been great, man. Shane Mosley is a humble champion. And I just, no, man, he worked too hard. And I've seen him in these small, dirty gyms in L.A. before he was, back when he was like 1-0, 5-0, 10-0, you know, in downtown L.A. and Compton and Watts. I've seen him in all these gyms, man. He's worked. He's put in the work. He's always been a great fighter. He's a Hall of Famer. He's great. Give him the benefit of the doubt.
Okay, okay. Look, don't misunderstand me. Shane Mosley, in addition to being a great guy, as you said, I fully believe that coming up the ranks, you know, he was clean, he was fighting good fights, and is one of the most talented fighters of this generation. But as we talked about, the same thing can be said for Barry Bonds. Alex Rodriguez was, you know, probably a Hall of Famer with or without taking any type of PEDs. I'm just asking you, take Shane Mosley's name out of it. Should boxers get in if they are either caught or admit to using steroids?
That's why there's first-degree murder and there's second-degree murder and
manslaughter. That's not the same thing.
There's intent. Intent. That's the main
thing. Okay, so you think intent matters. All right. That's a reasonable argument that intent matters. I don't know. Shane said he didn't know if he was taking it. I think there are plenty of people out there that don't believe
it. People that get caught more than once, then intent goes out the window.
Well, I would say this, though. When you get caught, it's never the first time you do something. In anything. Like, if you stole something from the general store...
It's the first time you got caught.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my whole point on all that. So you think there's a threshold... Let me ask you this, one of them, Mosley. Like, when you fought him in 2010, did it ever cross your mind that he might be taking something?
Well, we did VADA testing.
Right, but... I mean, like, so before that, but when you were talking about fighting him, did you want VADA testing? Was that something...
I didn't want it. I didn't need it. Let me say that. I didn't need it because it's too expensive.
Also because you punched like a teenage girl is what it is.
It's a good one. You threw me off. I didn't need it. Of course, I was concerned that, you know, he's done it before. He has a reputation. But I'm like, no, I'll beat him with that also. I'll beat him. That's a fighter's mentality. I don't care what you do. I'm going to beat this man. But we did VADA testing, and VADA testing's a pain in the ass. It's expensive, for one. It's too expensive. That's why fighters don't like to pay for them. But it's a pain in the ass. They test you a lot. They just surprise you in the middle of the night, early in the morning. You know how much I love my sleep. They stick you with needles. It's urine tests. It's a lot of work, man. So, you know, it really infringes with a camp, especially if you like sleeping a lot.
Yeah, just to put a button on the Mosley stuff, I have no issue necessarily with him being in the Hall of Fame and certainly one of the greats, but I think there should be a discussion about who should get in and who shouldn't. Like, you know, there are rumors for years about Marquez as well. He was never caught doing anything, but rumors for years about that. Rumors about a bunch of other guys for years doing that. As a fighter on the inside, I mean, you probably knew guys taking stuff.
And you've seen how Marquez's body changed. I mean, he went from flabby to muscular to pimples on his back. You never seen that with Shane Mosley. But hey, listen, he never got caught, like you said. You know, there's a lot of speculation and a lot of words.
But did you either fight against guys or...
I don't know.
But did you suspect?
Yes, I would say yes, and I beat them. So steroids doesn't teach you how to fight. It just makes you stronger, and the endurance goes longer. But you still got to learn how to fight.
The biggest reason, though, Sergio, the biggest reason it needs to be more... This needs to be a discussion when it comes to Hall of Fame and other things is because we still haven't had the worst case scenario. Worst case scenario is there's a Patrick Day type incident where the guy that kills him tests positive for something. And then you start talking about, should that guy go to jail? And then the government gets involved. Like, that day is probably coming, mostly because we don't care enough about this stuff.
Look, that's the extreme. And yes, when that day comes, and maybe the sport of boxing should get under the microscope. But if that's the case, and we'll end it on this, Chris, if that's the case, if you can keep a great fighter with your vote as a critic, as a writer, a great fighter away from the Hall of Fame, if you can do that with your power and your pen, well, then we can do it as fighters. When we vote, we need to have a vote for you getting to the Hall of Fame of writing, whatever it is, the Writers Guild Award or whatever it is. Then Shane Mosley can say, you know what? This asshole kept me out of the Hall of Fame, or at least tried. I'm not going to vote for him either.
There's literally no award that is like that a fighter votes on or
isn't
anything.
There a writing award?
There's
you guys
writing
get, like
awards.
A golden pen or something?
There's not a golden pen. You're such a dumbass. What are you talking about? All right, Sergio Moore, you can hear him on the call on DAZN Saturday. It's about 4:00 Eastern time when Joshua and Ruiz, the first bell rings. You can only see that on DAZN. Great fight, biggest fight of the year. Sergio, always a pleasure, my friend.
My man.
All right, when we come back, my conversation with Eddie Hearn. All right, Eddie Hearn is here, Matchroom Boxing promoter for Anthony Joshua, recording here in the lobby of the hotel in Saudi Arabia. Is this the biggest moment of your professional career, Anthony Joshua, Andy Ruiz, the rematch?
Yeah, undoubtedly. I mean, not just because it's a big fight, but also because of where we are. and what it took to get here and the logistics of making this happen. And it's only really the last week or so that's really registered in my mind that, you know, in boxing, in this business, you kind of, you know, we do 50 shows a year. So it's just like rolling out. You never really get a chance to sit back and go, wow. And when we were at the arena last night, you know, you have to remember that 10 weeks ago we came here and it was just desert. You know, they had a vision and a dream to create this stadium, and we were really, yeah, we were worried, and we've helped and we've worked together with the GSA out here, and it's just epic, you know. And this feels like we've done some major events in the past, but this is one that I think we'll all remember for a long time. You know, when the heavyweight world championship took place in Diriyah in Saudi Arabia, I think it's a one-off, and it's a pleasure to be a part of.
It is interesting, though. Sitting at the fighter meetings yesterday, I'm looking across the room, and there's you, there's AJ, and there's Rob McCracken. And the first thing I thought to myself was all three of these people have so much at stake on Saturday. I mean, you as the promoter for Anthony, a lot of money on the line going into 2020. Anthony, you know, he'll probably continue his career one way or the other, but it goes two different directions. And Rob, quietly under an enormous amount of pressure, too, as the trainer for the guy coming up with a new game plan. It just feels like there's not the weight of the world might be hyperbolic, but a lot of pressure on all three of you.
But that's what happens when you have a huge event, and that's when you know it's a massive fight, when you have that kind of pressure. I have to be really honest and say that a lot of people have said to me, oh, you know, wouldn't be great for Matchroom if AJ lost. I promise, I haven't thought about that once. I just want him to win, you know, like as a mate. You know, I signed him when he turned professional. We've been with him for, what, 6 years? Like, he's a good friend of mine, and I know how much he wants to win. So, you know, titles come and go. And as whilst we'd love to have a piece of the heavyweight division, we know that anything could happen in this fight. And, you know, if we win, we're in a great spot. And if we lose, we're not as in a good spot. But it's just about winning, really. It's about seeing him achieve what he wants to achieve, and right now that is about becoming a two-time heavyweight world champion. And I've not seen him this motivated and this focused for a long time. Doesn't mean he's going to win, but I can tell you, like, the difference between him now and before the Ruiz fight, even before the Povetkin fight, probably even before the Parker fight, different people. Now, this is like he was before the Klitschko fight. He's got that fire in his belly, and I think although it was a brutal defeat back in June, maybe it was the best thing that could have happened to him, because it certainly changed his mindset and love for the game.
All that being said, you've been in camp periodically with Anthony. All the things you said about him just there, you've seen Ruiz this week, you've seen Anthony this week. What's your level of confidence right now going into this fight?
Confident, but also very aware that Ruiz has just stopped AJ, knocked him down four times, and he can really fight. And it's overcoming, isn't it? It's about getting the tactics right, but it's also about overcoming mentally what happened at Madison Square Garden. Not for me, but for him. And I think he'll do that. I said to him last night, you know, we were talking about the fight. And I said to him, you know, this fight, it's really not that hard to analyse, right? You know, maybe he'll do this, maybe he'll do that. No. Look. You've got to keep him at range and hit him on the way in and hurt him on the way in and move your feet. And he's got to try and close a distance. That's it. Mm-hmm. And that's all he's going to do. Like, there's nothing that Ruiz is going to do in this fight, in my opinion, that's going to surprise anyone. He's going to come forward. He's going to move his head. Great lateral movement. He's going to try and close the distance. He's going to get in close, let his hands go, work the body, and try and trade with Anthony. That's it. So you know what you've got to overcome. It's just a case of doing it. And Anthony's quite a deep thinker. Like, if he gets the game plan, he's very difficult to beat. And I think one of the problems with June 1st is, not that there wasn't a game plan, but I just don't think they were ready for Ruiz, the style, and of course getting hurt like that in the third round and not being able to recover. So my level of confidence is good, but also very aware that this is a fight that could go either way.
Do you think he needs to be a significantly different fighter in this fight, or can he be the guy, or a better version of the guy that fought Klitschko, that fought Joseph Parker, that fought Dillian Whyte? Or does he have to reinvent himself for this fight?
No, I don't think he needs to be, you know, he needs to be at his best, but he doesn't need to be better than that. You know, he doesn't have to all of a sudden produce this career best performance. Let's not forget that after three rounds, well, after 2 minutes, 10 seconds of three rounds, if you like, he was virtually controlling the fight. By the way, he was really poor. Mm. I mean, he was moving off the back foot. I don't know what he was doing. I said to him last night, you know, his hands were down by his side. He was moving off the back foot, letting Ruiz walk him down. But he won the rounds. He knocked Ruiz down. Up until Ruiz got up and hit him with that left hook, he was basically in control of the fight, pretty much. Not that it was a foregone conclusion.
Mm.
Take your time, keep hurting him, pick your moments, pick your moments. He wins the fight on a really bad performance, right? But, so a good performance, in my opinion, should be beating Andy Ruiz. And that's what I've said all along. And, you know, obviously the criticism of, oh, you know, you were crazy to choose Andy Ruiz. Come on. When we chose Andy Ruiz, it was a mismatch. The truth is that a good Anthony Joshua should be beating a good Andy Ruiz, in my opinion. But he's always dangerous while he's got the tank and while he's got the energy. The first three rounds will be treacherous. They will be. So AJ's got to use his feet. But more importantly, people keep talking about using your feet, keeping a distance with a jab. Correct. You've also got to hurt him. You've got to make him second guess. You've got to show the feints, stop him from just gaining confidence, walking you down, letting his hands go. AJ can punch. He's punching harder than ever. He's going to be nice and light, about 17 stone. He's been hurting people consistently in sparring that he hasn't done over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he's going to knock him out. I really do. And I don't want to see the fight go 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 rounds. And I don't like to see AJ winning on points. I want to see him take him out early. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised if he did, because he's punching with spite. But we also know the fascination with this fight is AJ can win by knockout. Ruiz can win by knockout. Ruiz can win on points. AJ can win on points. Absolutely everything is in play in this fight. Anything could happen. Could go a round. Could go 12 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Just no one can sit there truthfully and know what is going to happen in this
fight. Do you see anything different in Ruiz? I know you didn't spend much time around him in the build-up to this fight. He clearly has, I don't know what the right phrase is, enjoyed his newfound fame. Mm-hmm. He had a big day at his hometown. I saw him show up at the press conference. He's got new jewelry on
the
neck.
The he's got cars,
the ring. He's got a
mansion.
Lot of stuff.
Good luck to him. I mean, you can't work all your life to want to achieve something, then achieve it and not enjoy the fruits that come with it. Andy Ruiz, and I really don't mean this disrespectfully, is, when I say a simple kind of guy, I don't mean like mentally. I just mean his life. You know, he's a happy-go-lucky individual. He doesn't overthink things. And that's a good thing for him in a fight like this. You know, he's not going to start overthinking, oh, can I do it again? Oh, I don't want to lose my belt. Oh, I'm in Saudi Arabia. Oh, he's just like, yeah, it's a fight, as the first one was. And that's what makes him dangerous. Don't forget, what made him dangerous in that first fight is he got up after a brutal left hook and said, do you know what? I'm just going to trade with you now.
Mm-hmm.
9 out of 10 heavyweights would have backed up on the ropes, got backed up, been hit by 20 shots, and a ref would have jumped in. Over. That's what makes him dangerous. He's Mexican. He's got the fire in his belly. He's got that attitude where he won't give up. And you've got to repeatedly hurt him. You've either got to knock him clean out, or you've got to take his heart away, and probably his legs as well, and just keep on hurting him. Head and body. Break his heart, wear him out, and then beat him up. And I think AJ's got to be the governor in this fight. He's got to be the bigger man. You know, he can't let this guy manhandle him around the ring. He's got to control the center, and he's got to beat him up.
You mentioned the mental part of all this, and I agree. I think that's the most fascinating part, because, you know, Anthony's lost in the amateurs before, but this is the first time he's had a knockout loss as a pro, coming in as a challenger, a whole different type of mindset. I mean, one of the things people have said and written is that it sounds like AJ, when he talks, is trying to convince himself that he's able to win, that he's still Anthony Joshua. What have you seen from that side of him, the mental part of it coming into this?
I just think that, you know, like Andy Ruiz being that simple kind of guy in his lifestyle and mindset, AJ's a little bit more complex. You know, he likes to study. He likes to understand things. He likes to be comfortable with the strategy and what he's doing. So he's like no other fighter I've ever seen, where we'll be able, like last night we had a conversation about the fight, almost like the tactics and how it would play out. Like, he did it before the Klitschko fight. He did it before the Charles Martin fight. He's done it his whole career because he likes to analyse things and be sure within himself. And when he is, That's when he produces his best performances. And right now, he's really mentally solid in terms of his confidence and what he's got to do to win this fight. When it unraveled at Madison Square Garden, I think he didn't... That was one of the problems, that he didn't know how to deal with it because he didn't expect it and it wasn't part of the game plan and things just unraveled. This time, he's ready for war. So when war unfolds, he'll be mentally ready. Whereas last time, I mean, one of the problems was he got concussed and he couldn't recover, but everything unraveled so quickly, didn't it? You know, but we said last night, you know, you won the fourth round, don't you? Like, you were totally out of it. You were concussed in the fight. You'd just been knocked down twice and you won the fourth round. So there's a lot of confidence there, you know. It wasn't like Andy Ruiz knocked him down twice and was just this assassin. Like, I think he actually blew a gasket as well. It was just that AJ couldn't recover quick enough. So I think that he's got to remember that Ruiz will tire in this fight, you know, especially when he's getting a double jab as sharp as hopefully the one that will come on Saturday night and hurt continuously. But Josh has got to be razor sharp early in this fight. I think Ruiz is going to really go for it early and try and heap on the pressure.
So you, based on everything you just said, it sounds like you're clearly...
Based on everything I just said, I have no idea.
Well, no. But here's one thing I think you do believe. You don't believe Anthony is cashing out right here.
No,
you don't believe this is kind of like take
Chris,
the money.
Honestly,
and
right? He absolutely loves boxing. He's a student of the game, but he's only halfway through his degree. And Anthony will box this Saturday. He will box in 2020, 2021, 2022. Honestly, this sport saved his life. You know, he was going down a bad path. He was going to prison. He found boxing. It changed his life. And he is obsessed with it. He is addicted to it. He loves it. He loves improving as a fighter, as a person. And he will not leave this sport. He's 30 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, he's had 24 fights. He's unified the heavyweight division twice. And if he loses on Saturday, he's lost to one man. But forget that. We don't want to lose. You know, he has to win on Saturday. For himself. That's the way he looks at it. And he's put the pressure on himself so much so to do that. And I think he needs to. Now, you can't go through this and go, well, if I lose, it's okay. No, you've got to say to yourself, if I lose, it's absolutely disastrous.
Well, what do you make then of him saying, though, like he said it to me, and I'm sure he said it to others, you know, maybe Andy Ruiz has my number. When he says stuff like that, you're like, all right, well.
Yeah, but I mean, he's not that guy that you can just bluff and just pump him with false confidence. Mm. Like he's saying, you know, if he lost to Andy Ruiz tonight, maybe he has got his number. He's not going to bluff himself and just say, no, I wasn't, you know, I was terrible last time. This time I'm going to do this. He believes that this time he will win. And he's very confident that he will do so. Mm. But he also knows that anything can happen. And if it does, you know, I think he's just very honest, Chris. You know what I mean? Like, and sometimes
he is.
Maybe too honest, where like a lot of fighters wouldn't say that. They'd just go, no, I'm the better fighter. I'm this and that. He said, well, maybe he's too good for me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like some people might see that as a sign of weakness. I don't really. It's just him. And that's his mindset. But he does believe he's going to win. Mm-hmm. He really believes he's going to win. And he believes he's going to win by knockout as well.
I mentioned the pressure that, you know, for you, for Anthony, for Rob McCracken, the fourth sort of person or entity in that is DAZN as part of that. And we've kind of reached and I had this conversation with someone over at Fox that we're reached the point where networks are openly rooting for fighters.
Yeah.
Like Fox is out there rooting for Andy Ruiz.
Yeah.
There'll be a party at the Fox offices if Andy Ruiz winds up winning this fight. How important, as someone that has a long-term deal with DAZN, how important is Anthony Joshua winning for that service?
It's important. I mean, to be honest, like knowing the people at DAZN as well, they're not kind of bitter boxing people yet because they haven't been in the business long enough. They will be there. Give
there.
Them
they'll
3 years,
there.
Chris. They'll be there. So they're really excited about this fight. And as much as they see the long-term future with AJ, they're just really excited about the fight. And don't rule out as well Andy Ruiz appearing on DAZN again if he wins, because he has his own management team as well with David Garcia and lawyers and people advising him. He does have a contract with PBC, but he doesn't have a broadcast contract with Fox. So it won't be my place to necessarily offer him a deal, but you can bet your life that if he was to win, DAZN will be offering Andy Ruiz a major deal. So that's their business, not mine. I hope he don't win. I don't want them to offer him a deal. I want AJ to get the big deal. You know, and if AJ wins, he will be committing his future to DAZN, unquestionably. So it is great for the platform. But, you know, we've got to just consistently put on great events for DAZN and great fights. And I think you're going to see in 2020 a lot more fighters taking maybe one-off fights with DAZN. Because sometimes we've got to position ourselves as that promoter who has to provide the great fights for DAZN, whether those fighters are aligned to Matchroom or not. Great if they are, and important to grow the stable, and important to grow the Matchroom brand in America, but also more important to consistently drive quality events to the DAZN platform. And if that means bringing Charlo in for one fight only to fight Demetrius Andrade, no problem. If that means bringing Mikey Garcia in on a fight-by-fight basis to fight Jesse Vargas, no problem. We've got one job, deliver for DAZN. That's all we need to do and all we want to do. Joe Markowski's over there. He's just nodding his head. He actually heard that. He says, that's correct, that's correct.
Joe's one of those guys not yet jaded by boxing, but getting there.
Very close
to getting it. Does that represent a change for you then? Because you came in and you were offering fighters multi-fight deals. Does this sort of mindset of doing one-offs represent a shift in philosophy?
No, I mean, we've done a lot of multi-fight deals with fighters, but what I've seen is sometimes fighters' reluctancy to jump ship because of false promises by other networks, not by us. So in that respect, it's like, oh, you know, I'm being offered this, I'm being offered that, and do I want to risk my relationship by jumping ship? I'm like, well, if you're not comfortable with that, do one fight. And I'll pay you three times more than you're going to get for your next fight, and you have no commitment. Mm. Like, what a great position to be in. So, again, all we have to do is keep delivering for DAZN. DAZN aren't really, you know, they want us to obviously build a fantastic stable, but they want us to deliver great fights. So, if I went to DAZN with Charlo against Demetrius Andre, they wouldn't say, oh, have you locked Charlo down in a multi-fight deal? They'd just go, great. So really, that's, you've got the Matchroom business and the DAZN business, but the two work hand in hand, because without our DAZN relationship, maybe Matchroom Boxing USA isn't in the same position. So the first and foremost, we must deliver for our fighters, of course, but also to deliver for DAZN and keep giving the subscribers and fans great value for money. And we've done that consistently. Like, you have to look at the schedule that's been on and that's coming up, and look at what Fox and other pay-per-view outlets are consistently charging fight fans, which is $80 virtually a month for one fight, and know that the DAZN product is a fantastic product for fight fans. And really, I believe 2020 will be the year where we really take control of the US fight market.
You realize just Demetrius Andrade listens to this podcast and will and
Demetrius
will
Andrade
DM
needs,
looking
yeah.
for his next fight.
Demetrius Andrade needs a big fight, and I'm frustrated because no one really wants to fight him because he's very, very good. So what we've got to do is we've got to put up the money to get that, you know. And, you know, he's going to have it. Hopefully he'll fight in January in Miami. And then, you know, spring, summer, he's got to be in the monster fights. And he wants that for his legacy as well. You know, he's in his prime. We can't miss this opportunity for Demetrius.
Lastly, because you mentioned Mikey Garcia, he has admitted that he has an offer, as you kind of talked about Jesse Vargas on the table. I mean, you have been hardcore recruiting Mikey Garcia, I think, since the beginning.
I said in an interview yesterday, it's like, Mikey Garcia is like, you know, maybe when you're at college or whatever, at school, and you fall in love with this girl, and you're sort of like, you're trying to take her out, and you're treating her so well, and you're showing her how great you are, and eventually she realizes that you're the one for her. That's how I feel with Mikey Garcia. A year and a half ago, we sat down and I told him this wild idea we had and plan with DAZN. He looked at me like I was mad. And every couple of months we get together and he's saying, well, you're doing really well. You know, when Canelo joined the platform, Triple G joined the platform. Wow, you guys are serious. And I really feel like now we're in a position where we should get together. And I think the Jesse Vargas fight is a really good fight because he's been up at 147 and lost fairly convincingly against Errol Spence. The Jesse Vargas is another 147-pound fighter against someone that is a world-class fighter, two-weight world champion. But we'll find out what Mikey can really do at 47. Because if he can't beat Jesse Vargas, then, you know, you can't look at the likes of Pacquiao and, you know, Spence rematch and stuff like that. So I'm confident that we will be working with Mikey Garcia in 2020.
I feel like you look at and I wrote this, that you look at Mikey Garcia almost like a magnet. Like, you know, people, you get Mikey Garcia and there's so many people kind of around weight class that want to fight Mikey Garcia, that that would be your ability draw guys over.
Yeah, and I think that's what we've done with the middleweight division as well. You know, if you're a middleweight, and this is the frustrating thing with Charlo, like, and you know, Terence Crawford in the same boat. Surely Charlo looks at the roster on DAZN and says, I have to be with DAZN because I will never fight Canelo, Triple G, Billy Joe Saunders, Callum Smith, Demetrius Andrade unless I'm with DAZN. And I feel like when we get Mikey Garcia, it opens up the door for Thurman, Poulter, Pacquiao, all of these top guys, because at the moment we have no ammunition to go to a 147 fighter and say, look at your options with DAZN. You know, Terence Crawford must be painfully unhappy because he can't get a big fight. We could even go to Terence Crawford once his contract was up and say, we'll give you Mikey Garcia at 147. You know, so Mike, and Mikey knows that. You know, it's not a secret. Mikey knows that he could be the key for us to unlock some big fights at 140 and 147. Hmm. Josh Taylor, Mikey Garcia, great fight. Regis Progress, Mikey Garcia, great fight.
What's your relationship with Josh Taylor right now?
Good. I mean, you know, we just promoted his last fight.
Right.
We got a great relationship with his promotional company. I think they'll be looking to align themselves. I think Josh Taylor's got a choice. He comes with us and boxes probably his mandatory and then Mikey Garcia, or Top Rank try and lure him with the Ramirez unification, which is definitely a fight he wants. But, you know, we paid Jose Ramirez very handsomely for the Maurice Hooker fight. He's going to want even more money for the Undisputed fight. Mm. I'm not sure it's there. I mean, I heard his people say that it was an ESPN pay-per-view. I mean, good luck with those conversations with Bob Arum. Mm. You know, but it is the Undisputed fight. But we would be interested in doing that Undisputed fight on DAZN. And we've already done Jose Ramirez in a unification fight. So why wouldn't Top Rank let us do the Undisputed fight if the money was right for their client? They've showed a willingness to do that before. So, you know, I think Mikey really brings so much to the platform of also recruiting other talent as well.
Mm. One other thing, just because Canelo is going to be here to see Anthony Joshua fight, ostensibly supporting Andy Ruiz, though Anthony Joshua made it clear he really likes Canelo.
Yeah,
he's a big fan how his career has unfolded. You represent Golovkin. We know where Golovkin stands and all that. Have you had any conversations with anyone about the possibility of Golovkin-Canelo in 2020?
Yeah, I mean, that's a must. And I think all parties.
Well, people say it's a must all the time.
Yeah, no. I think, Chris, you know, I think all parties now know that fight must happen in 2020. You know, you have two options for that fight, May and September. You know, I think from a DAZN perspective, they'll want that fight as soon as possible. And I think they'd want that fight in May. I think perhaps Canelo and maybe Golovkin with his mandatory might be looking more at September for that fight. You know, we have, I think if he doesn't fight Golovkin next, I really think it's coming from two people, which is Billy Joe Saunders and Callum Smith.
Which puts you at the intersection of it all with representing both those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think I'm going to continuously get shots at Canelo to eventually we beat him. And, you know, but he's a great fighter. I have a huge amount of respect for him. But I think that he'll be looking at those two guys. But they do need to hurry up, because if not, we're going to do Callum Smith against Billy Joe Saunders in a unification fight. So we'll see. But, you know, I really do believe Triple G against Canelo will happen in 2020. And hopefully one of our other guys gets a shot as well. I'd love Demetrius to get the shot as well, but I'm not sure you'll see Canelo at 160 anymore.
Hmm. Eddie Hearn, will you at least be the most nervous you've ever been ringside Saturday?
Yeah, I've been nervous for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like normally I get nervous like Friday or something like that. But honestly, I just want him to win so much because I know how much it means to him personally. So like if he wins this fight, Chris, I will go nuts. I will be over the top rope. I'll make a complete idiot of myself. I promise you that.
It feels like there's a he's going to tell a story too after the fact. Like something was going on in his life before that first fight. That's at least what I've been able to glean and being around him a little bit. It seems like he doesn't want to say it now because he feels like it's excuse making.
Yeah,
but
I think
after
he'll say it if he wins. Mm-hmm. And I promise you, it wasn't a panic attack, and it wasn't getting knocked out in sparring or anything like that. Those two things are absolute rubbish. But I don't think even I know the full story, but there's definitely, he's alluded to the fact that he knows why he lost. Mm-hmm. But you can only really tell that story if you win. Because if you lose again, then it's just an irrelevant excuse, isn't it? So I think that he feels now like a different person and a different fighter. But the proof will be in the pudding on Saturday night live on DAZN.
Eddie Hearn, good luck on Saturday.
Thanks, mate.